The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to October 2005.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Kathy Bush, and we have a couple regulars and a special guest star with us today. So let me introduce the panel to you. To my left, from the Department of Philosophy, it's soon-to-be-paroled chair, Professor Beth Oljar.
Good to be here.
And radio listeners, that smile just lit up New York City.
That's right. Wait till I'm paroled.
That's right. Absolutely. There you go. And across the table from Beth, the man who's responsible for the pre-college engineering programs here at UD Mercy, it's Dan, the Dapset Man Maggio.
Hi, Kathy. How's it going?
And how's Kitty Boy doing, Dan?
The cat is fine.
Uh-huh.
Still growing. Like,
growing?
Peanut, is that his name?
Yes.
Peanut.
Spaz is a better name. And then yesterday I had to hire somebody to come in and look at my furnace.
Oh, no.
And, of course, the kitty's, like, all nice to the furnace guy.
Right.
The first guy picks him up,
aww,
holds him, and the cat's all nice. And then leave, and the cat turns into a monster.
Goes after you. That's sort of like my fat boy, who he's kind to everyone else in the world, and then I look like a World War I trench victim by the time that they finish. This happens that way. Now, let me introduce our special guest with us today, the recently unparoled chair of the Religious Studies Department, our specialist in healthcare ethics. It's Dr. Professor James Balfour Tubbs.
Who's grateful to be out of the office.
I bet. I really. No more papers to grade, babe. Yeah. It's midterm time here at the Happy University, so there has been a lot of testing, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of grading going on. I was so grateful for Canadian Thanksgiving weekend, where I was able to take my exams up on the train. And I was held captive, so there was nothing I could do. And it was too far to the bar car, so I got all my grading done right away. Yay. I know. I was like, amen and hallelujah. Well, this is a show where you can send us questions, and if you stump the panel, you win a prize, a wonderful Tech Day or Ethics Bowl t-shirt.
They're coming. I'm picking them up Monday.
Excellent. Right straight, hot off the silkscreen press.
Yes.
Then. There we go. And soon we will be posing for and bringing back the autographed photograph or the photographed autograph.
When is that actually going
to... Well, that's why we need to get some schedules together, because I've got conflicting days from Matt and from Jeff for some reason. Jeff is teaching all his courses at night this term?
I don't think so.
Okay.
He's got one morning class,
okay.
I believe.
Well, then
we should do it in that new space, though, out by...
Yes.
I think so. We have really, really pimped up and beautified campus.
Yeah,
very,
awesome.
Very nice that way.
Well.
Landscaped. Okay. Well, you know.
Hey.
Hey. It's
we're
Detroit.
In Motown.
All right. So how can you get questions to us?
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Okay.
And if that's not thrilling enough, you can read the bulk mail memo that came out.
Oh, I love bulk mail. Sort by zip code. I of course, St. Vincent de Paul used to do a lot of nonprofits, so we had to sort by zip code. Oh, my, that took for hours, but okay.
Well, if you're on the computer, you can just sort the database before you print out your labels.
That's if you had a database.
Don't beguile us with your computer skills.
There you go. Our first set of questions today comes to us from the one, the only, the man,
Bert
Tilley. Indeed. And he writes, "Dear profs, as for displaced persons from Hurricane Katrina, we did get a few here in Etowah, Alabama. Our local churches set many of them up in their facilities. We even had a few locals posing as these people in order to get free stuff. They were nabbed and are now being taken care of by the police department and other correctional agents."
Yes.
That is low. I am sorry.
Yes. That- well, it's like within a week after the hurricane hit, they had handed out the $2,000 credit card.
Oh, the debit card
right?
thing,
and then
yeah.
they caught a few people at the mall buying $800 Gucci bags. Do you remember that story?
No. Aw. Bert says, "I've added a few movie questions to this set.
12 oh
of 16 is your pass rate." Okay, so Dan, you're carrying the colors.
75%.
All right, excellent.
Good. That's what I thought. I'm glad to know that I got that calculation right.
75%. Not bad for a midterm grade, is it?
Not
okay.
bad.
It's a C on my scale.
Okay.
It's a C on my scale.
Mine too.
okay. C or a lowest C plus. I can't remember.
Basically, yeah. I told them that's why I love metric. Gosh, it's all done by tens and 100s. What is wrong with this country? Just go to metric, okay?
What is the quarter pounder going to become?
Let's see.
It could be what it
0.75.
Quarter pounder and
how many grams? 454 grams in a pound.
Why not? I think that rocks. Okay.
Le Big Mac.
Le Big Mac. All right.
It would be about 101 grammar.
With like about 10,001 grams of...
No, about 111 grammar. Okay.
This titled figure's name appears on a wooden board in the lower right quadrant. Okay. Featuring a green cloth and another cloth wrapping a man's head, a lifeless hand holds a fountain pen. The subject of immediate critical praise, this neoclassicist scene was a public memorial to a martyr of the French Revolution. What is the name of the painting depicting a man in a bathtub, dead, he puts in parentheses, by painter Jacques-Louis David?
Marat in his bath.
That's right, the death of Marat in his bath. Mm.
Yes, but the death of Socrates, also by Jacques-Louis.
Charlotte Corday was the one
yes,
that did
it. Yes, that's right. Charlotte Corday.
She got the guillotine for it.
Mm-hmm, she did. That was the second Thermidor, wouldn't it have been?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the French. What are you going to do?
Hey. They make great fries. Get a grip. No.
This is true?
No. It's really, they got those from
Belgium. Well, and Jacques-Louis David's painting of the death of Socrates is amazing. I would like a copy of the print to hang in my dining room.
Ooh.
I'll steal you one.
Well, where could we find something like that?
What museum?
Yeah, let's go for it.
The original is probably in the Louvre.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Or someplace, you know, the Guggenheim or the, you know, some fancy schmancy place.
There you go. A newspaper columnist disapproves of his sister Susan's decision to marry a jazz musician named Steve Dallas in the film. So he hires a press agent to depict Steve as a pot smoker and a communist. I thought those were all one and the same, aren't they? Oh, excuse me.
Of course.
Featuring a score by the Chico Hamilton Quintet, this film sports classic dialogue by Clifford Odets, such as, "You're a cookie filled with arsenic. I'd hate to take a bite out of you." This film was directed by Alexander McKendrick, was made in 1957, starring Burt Lancaster and Tony Curtis. This is a great film.
Hmm.
It's kind of a slap at certain prominent columnists like Drew Pearson and that crowd. It has something to do with the olfactory sense.
Smell.
Yes.
Sweet smell of success.
The sweet smell of success. Have you ever seen it?
I think when I was a kid.
It's been showing on American Movie Classics and Turner Classic Movies, I should say.
No.
And I just absolutely was drawn into this. Burt Lancaster was pure evil. He was so evil in this film. Yeah.
He could pull that off.
He was pretty convincing as Elmer Gantry.
Yes, he was. That is such a scary movie. The first time I saw that, I had like nightmares that night. That film really, really rattled me. And then I just turned on TBN to calm myself down.
TBN?
Trinity Broadcasting Network.
No.
Yeah, come on. It's like watching Jack Van Impey and just checking out his news report with Rex Sella and Chuck. Great radio voice.
Well, I do watch Jack.
Oh, Jack is a hoot. He's like one of my favorite pieces of entertainment on Sunday night. What weather condition sits looking over the harbor and city on silent haunches and then moves on, which, according to Carl Sandburg, comes on little cat feet?
Fog.
Yeah, like Peanut. Does he still do stealth attack on you? Does he like wait and then like leap out at you and does that little kitty
rename
dance?
Rename him Psycho Kitty.
Yeah. Occasionally, yes. Okay. Especially when I'm eating.
Aw. Does he have a favorite toy yet? Has he like a...
No.
Have you had the catnip talk?
I don't use catnip. I don't need to.
Oh. See, we grow it wild up in Pinnabog, and so Goofy has his own little... I was really horrified. My mother took
is
this
that
little...
What's wrong with that cat?
Now, I know. My mother actually brought some back in this baggie, and I looked at her and said, "Mom, if we got stopped by the state police and they saw this baggie of catnip,
no kidding.
I'm definitely telling them it's your cat, okay? I'm not getting hosed down by the state police or whatever." Oh, dear, they know the difference. So I hope so. Because I'm not bailing you out, Betty.
Yeah, how do you know they know the difference, Betty?
Yeah.
Have them eat some.
Good question. But the one thing about Goofy is that it does kind of mellow him out a little bit. When he just got like two out of hand, I have to admit, I would say, okay, here's some catnip. And then he would kind of do that Lady Sings the Blues kind of nodding effect after a bit. And it did kind of just keep him, how shall I say, a little less on edge. So maybe that's what Peanut... Have you taken Peanut for his surgery yet?
Yes.
That didn't help calm Peanut down?
No.
Wow.
Well, it probably ticked him off.
After half an hour out of the cage, he was back to normal. They're like, it's going to take him
maybe
a couple days.
Maybe he wasn't fixed enough.
Recover from the anesthesia.
Really
did. Took him like an hour.
Wow.
Maybe he's suffering.
Although
from
I did kind of stumble a few times. I did see him go like this. It's just really hilarious.
Okay. These molecules get their name because while they're normally maintaining a relatively rigid structure, the application of heat or an electric potential can cause them to reorient. Normally, no light passes through the two filters. But when the spiral molecules are electrically charged, they twist, rotating the polarization of light that can pass between the filters. Identify this class of materials, often used for displays in wristwatches and computer notebook displays.
Liquid crystal displays?
Exactly,
yeah,
liquid crystal.
What movie does that have to do with?
Well, no, see, the, oh, that's
no,
right.
Another
Jim,
topic.
Yeah, another
okay.
topic. Because,
wandered.
Yeah, Bert kind of goes, it's very, in fact, and he has questions for the panel. That's not bad. Okay. A blind man from the Beggars Union identifies Hans Beckert as the abductor of Elsie Beckman after recognizing Hans whistling nervously from Edvard Grieg's In the Hall of the Mountain King. A street kid responds by placing a chalk mark on Beckert's back, which Hans notices in the reflection of a toy store window. Hans eludes the police but cannot evade the petty criminals who resent him for introducing a police crackdown. This describes what 1931 film by Fritz Lang?
Fritz Lang, I know.
And it's a one-letter title.
This M.
Yes, it's a great film. Have you ever seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah, Fritz Lang, really, those German
There's
realists.
A child killer in that
yes,
movie.
There yes, there is. Woo.
Icky.
Yeah, but it's very stark. This film is very interesting to me. I was really just...
Well, all of Fritz Lang's films have that sort of expressionistic quality to
yeah,
them.
Yeah, you know. You've seen Metropolis, haven't you?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you should. Good, good film.
We had a little loop, dog.
And when we think about that, let's take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback, 1998.
On my left, one of the original founding fathers of Ask the Professor from the Department of History, Professor Emeritus, former chair, Fred Hayes.
Yes. Well, thank you.
I want to begin this program, which is the last program I will be moderating, with a set of questions that were actually sent to Borders by Bert Tilley of Atala,
Bert.
Alabama. Bert has been one of our regular questioners for, it seems like, forever. He says, good luck, Edwin, George, and Sarah. Don't be a stranger, but stay strange. Thank you, Bert. Yes. This U.S. industrialist made cars... The Hoover and the Grand Coulee Dams, aluminum foil, and the Liberty Ships. Who was he?
Henry Kaiser.
That's right. That's right.
Right. He made the Kaiser roll, too.
Yeah,
people don't know that. Being Emperor of Germany.
Yeah. There you go. What deformity had Kaiser Wilhelm II?
His arm was withered. His left arm.
It occurred during his birth. What was it?
His withered arm.
That's right.
Royalty is itself a deficiency.
Yeah.
Did he pitch for the Tigers?
You're listening to an encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor program from October 2005.
Rock it on a Friday afternoon here in Detroit. Yes, we're back with our questions from Bert Tilley. And we've also been making good time on that almond tea ring. So once again, we thank you, Knudsen's Danish Bakery. Yum, yum. Eat them up. Okay.
Yummo, as Rachel Ray would say. Super. I'm really into the 30-minute meals thing on Food
delish.
Channel.
Absolutely delish.
Yummo.
I mean,
that's what she says, Rachel Ray.
Yes. Oh, the Food Channel. Carol, Ken's sister got me so addicted. It's awful now. It's really bad. It's very bad.
I got a new roasting pan. I used it yesterday. It was so cool.
Excellent. Very good.
Who did you roast?
In 1996, this soft drink was dropped in favor of the Minute Maid brand by Coca-Cola. This brand first appeared in Naples, Italy in 1955. It was originally available in the U.S. from 1958 through the 1980s. In Saudi Arabia, it is available in black currant flavor, and in China, it is available in lychee. I think he misspelled lychee. He misspelled that.
Fresco.
No. Other flavors include pineapple, strawberry, and grape. Name this beverage that is most associated with the orange flavor, which is being promoted in America by a fake pop group, the Fantanas.
Fanta.
It's Fanta.
Oh, I haven't seen Fanta.
I was
going to
say, thank you. Did you ever?
They're not selling it in this country anymore.
No, and so it's sort of this. Yeah, that said, in 1996 they dropped it in favor of the Minute Maid brand. So that must be the Minute Maid orange sodas.
Must
would
be.
That be it?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, I thought Fanta. Fanta.
Well, they're advertising it, so it must be around.
Yeah, but I love this pop group, the Fantanas. I got to find out who that is. I got to Google them because I just think that's a great name.
We've seen on. He's referring
You've
to
the commercials, right?
Yeah. Oh, the commercials. Yeah.
That's it. That's
them. Oh, yeah. Bert. Okay. Now we have questions for the panel. Okay. To the new daddy professor, I think he means Matt. How are those 3 o'clock feedings going?
Well, he's not here. That's kind of answers that question.
But I think isn't Dancing Baby JoJo beyond the feeding trip now?
I think he's at least a year old.
Yeah, he's got to be close to a year now. So we'll have to save that one to ask. Professor Mayo. Beth, paper clips, plastic or metal?
Both.
Metal.
It depends on what you use them for.
Really? Yeah. Okay, why would you use a metal one versus a plastic one?
Use a metal one if you actually want to hold things together.
I think the metal ones do hold better, but the plastic ones are colorful. So because I like color and, I mean, it's just more office supplies and those are fun for everybody.
Beth, I think, is a preferred customer at what? Office Depot. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Beth can tell you, like, the layout of any Office Depot store.
Office supplies rock. I think that's the real reason I became a professor, so I could buy them all the time.
Beth was the first person to turn me on to the label maker, and now it's so bad.
I was the first one to buy one of those for our college office, and now it's, like, indispensable.
She said, Kathleen, it's taken over your life. Mm-hmm. I love the label maker. So crazy.
Now, labeling is a bit anal retentive.
Yes,
too.
It is. It really is. But the label maker rocks. I just totally love it. Dan, what was the type or style of your first handheld calculator?
Well, I had it was the TI. And it was one of the original ones that had
the Texas Instruments.
I forget the name of the. We only have 7 positions, 7-bit.
Oh, kind of. Okay, yes.
The red display.
Yeah, function display, okay.
Yeah, and then it had the hard push button. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
It was
a scientific, but it was probably 10 times as big as they are today.
I know, weren't they enormous? I mean, they were huge. I remember Sue Harmon getting a TI-55.
That was a big thing. But my physics teacher still used a slide rule during class. It was hanging above the board. He would always use it.
There used to be a gigantic slide rule over in the engineering building.
I have one in my office.
It was like... big, big, big for display.
I stare at it when I don't have anything to do.
I still have my father's slide ruler. I do. It was something that
pocket
big...
slide ruler?
Yeah, well,
I've never seen one.
Yeah, it's pretty. He has it in this weird case and the whole bit. So, and it was funny because he used to try to take it out and show the kids, and they'd say, "But Grandpa, you can do this in just a minute," you know, on a calculator. It used to really disturb him. He thought that was a really great training for the mind using.
Well,
a slide
he's probably
ruler.
Right.
Okay. Here's my question. Kathy, did you ever have a sock monkey as a kid?
As a kid?
I was going to say, I still have a sock monkey. No, I did have a monkey, though, because in Canada, my godmother got me the Red Rose Tea monkeys. Red Rose Tea in Canada was advertised, and there was a group of monkeys, one playing like a banjo and one playing a guitar and one on the drums. And
that's not really a Curious George type.
It wasn't a Curious George type monkey, but she got me one of the Red Rose Tea monkeys for a Christmas present, and I kept that monkey. I even had that monkey in my dorm room, and he was sadly destroyed during a festivity.
Oh, you tell.
I can live with the pain. All right, I'm better now.
I'll have to get you the monkey from Hooked on Monkey Phonics.
That's true. Okay, now here's a question to all of us, but he said, first ask Jeff, were you one of those child prodigies? And then he said, ask the rest of the panel. So we'll leave that for Jeff.
Are you asking us about Jeff or asking us about us?
Asking now about you. Were you a child prodigy, Dan?
I don't think so.
James Balfour?
No.
No?
No.
Beth Ann?
Of course.
There we go.
Well, probably not, but it seemed like...
But it
I was
seemed
prodigious
like
in some areas. But
well, we are glad you're prodigious. Okay. Now, he did have a question, for all of you. Do you own a tire pressure gauge?
Absolutely.
Dan?
Absolutely. I use it once a month. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely? Dog?
I think Drew has one, but I actually do not understand how they work.
Can you help her here?
Because I'm an idiot.
I mean, how many times do you go on gauging your tires?
Every month.
You do it every month?
Spot every month. I check my air and refill the tires.
Oh, my God.
It's important.
I should. You're right.
I check them every time one of them looks kind of low.
Okay, well, my dad was always in this thing about having your oil change.
Once a month.
Yeah, and he would say, you know.
And then when I get the oil change, they do it too.
Right, they do it too.
And you're supposed to have them rotated every 6,000
miles.
Yes,
well, that's that I do.
Not myself, of course.
No, but somebody does that.
Somebody does that for me.
It's better for mileage, I understand, and the balance and everything, and safety. That's how he explained to me.
You don't want to replace your tires every 10,000 miles.
Mm-hmm. Good man, Dan.
I'm surprised I know all this.
No, I'm not, because Detroit is so the Motor City, but there you go. He also had a question.
Pothole City, too.
Yeah, isn't it? Although, now we've got orange barrels everywhere. These road repairs will eliminate this issue for us.
The one and only reason people pray for winter.
The barrels will be gone when the Super Bowl's over.
So just
hang in there until the Super Bowl's over.
He does have a question for Greg. How are those hissing cockroaches doing?
Ooh.
Greg Grabowski will not be joining us on the panel until January because, happily, Mary Tracy in our biology department delivered a baby, but a little few weeks early, so Greg had to pick up her courses.
Ooh.
So he is now teaching like 5 classes. He looks like ready for Friday. So, he's been super busy. In fact, he said, "Why can't you come over to my lab and tape there?" I said, Michael doesn't do hissing cockroach labs, okay? Just doesn't work.
I won't even go. If he says he's bringing the bugs, let me know because I will not
Here. I know. Beth does not like the creepy crawlies.
Oh.
No. Oh, these cockroaches are nasty.
They can be here, but I will not touch
them.
Thank
you. Okay. He said, now a few questions dealing with Chief Justice William Rehnquist. Jim reminded me of a very funny story about how Richard Nixon introduced him.
That's Judge Rehnquist.
Rehnquist, yeah. Close, but no cigar. As a clerk in the 1950s, William Rehnquist argued which case should be reaffirmed instead of accepting Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas.
Plessy.
I know. Is that scary? For those that are not aware of that case, Plessy versus Ferguson established the legality of separate but equal, which, of course, legalized segregation, but particularly endemic in school systems.
Yes, I can.
Can you really?
I don't even know why I'm surprised.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Well, God love him.
I'd want to hide it for the rest of my career.
I was about to. That was a little scary because, of course, Brown overturned the notion of separate but equal. In the 1960s, a federal prosecutor called him the principal source of the harassment of minority voters in which city? This would be in the American Southwest.
Rehnquist is the principal harasser.
The federal prosecutor called him, and this is open quotation, the principal source of the harassment of minority voters, close quotes, in which city?
Montgomery.
Dallas.
No, this is Southwest.
Phoenix?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Southwest. Well, Southwest is Texas Midwest. It's mid.
Yeah, I guess.
Mid-South.
But,
New Mexico.
In 1980... Justice Rehnquist supported a law calling for the display of what in every public classroom in Kentucky?
I'm afraid to ask. No. American flag?
Not American flag.
Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments. Okay. This is a public classroom. There's some I'm not getting here. poor Beth is like ready
just
to beat her head against
the
table.
The reading of the
estate.
Well, I mean,
sorry, yeah.
Well, because
he was not in the majority.
No, there you go.
But if the law establishes that you can put the Ten Commandments up in a classroom, then what prevents every other religion from demanding their right to place whatever they want?
Practically speaking, only the fact that they're not in the majority.
Right, that would be
the establishment law is supposed to prevent.
Nice.
Okay. Well, just checking.
Okay. I think they should just have pages of details.
And then what defines a religion? I mean, can I come up with my own religion and say, this is my document, I want it on the wall too?
Well, I think Jim's argument is very cogent, that you are a one-person religion versus...
Right. But shouldn't the law, isn't that independent
for
of the
legal
law?
For legal protection, you have to meet certain conditions, I think,
yeah.
Would, like,
to
I have
get
to have
like
a,
IRS tax exemptions and stuff.
They did get into that.
I have to have a dwelling where I hold services.
Well, someplace earmarked for services, certainly.
They did into that in 1968 when considering conscientious objection, and there were certain things that they said had to
that
be
you
met
have
in
to
order
mean.
To call something
couldn't,
a religion.
So you just couldn't say that.
Say, right. I don't want to go fight in your war.
If you had religious scruples, they had to be based in a tradition that you could
identify.
A religious
tradition, yeah. Hmm. Like, and Catholics, for example, had their theory of just war versus unjust war. That would certainly help that status, well, in some cases. Okay, in 1999... Justice Rehnquist created a controversy by leading a sing-along of what tune?
I don't even want to ask.
I love
like
the look
Dixie
on your face.
Dixie or something. Oh, my God. Yeah, Dixie.
Just the look on her face.
Oh, I'm sorry, because I had to turn the page, and then I saw that.
It's a nice tune.
Well, you know, I'm sure that with the proper sleepwear, it's a nice tune, you know, and the right accoutrement ensemble, I'm sure it's okay, but...
I had to sing it in 8th grade history.
Well, okay, in a history context, but where was this sing-along at? Like Camp Klan on the Lake or what? Oh, I just
probably
have a hard time
with
that.
Probably a Supreme Court office party.
Mm. I hope there was a lot of, you know what, available. Probably, maybe the justices were a little liquored up. Okay.
He also is the first Chief Justice to ever invent adding gold stripes to his to the sleeves of his gown for the impeachment proceedings.
Really?
Yes, against Clinton.
Very...
To identify himself.
Oh, okay. In 2000, Justice Rehnquist refused to recuse himself from hearings and decisions involving which corporation that his son helped to represent legally.
Oh,
this is a biggie, too.
Not Microsoft.
Microsoft. Oh. As Chief Justice, William Rehnquist was a big fan of this classic masked rider of the plains. In fact, he kept a signed autographed photo of Clayton Moore on the wall of his chamber.
The Lone Ranger.
Yeah. Wow. Do you think that maybe had something to do with some of his viewpoints, that he was just kind of out there on the plain, like on his own kind of thing? Maybe?
Well, that kind of southwestern rugged individualism and
like Barry Goldwater kind
much,
of.
Yeah.
Barry was different, too.
Barry was a principled libertarian.
Yes. I mean, who'd have thunk it that Barry Goldwater would be considered a 19th century liberal, you know, kind of thing. Oi, 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 oi. Wow.
Scary.
I appreciate
so cool
Goldwater's consistency.
Yeah.
I didn't appreciate some of the things he was saying in the 60s, but I appreciate his consistency.
No. This 1970 Yale Law School valedictorian served under two Republican presidents and then became a Wall Street Journal columnist. The diary of his first year in Hollywood was published as Dreams. Can you name this guy who appeared in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and hosted a game show with his name in the title?
Ben Stein's Money?
No, Ben Stein.
Ben Stein. No. So we're going to have to stop here. Wow, we were just Rehnquist to death. But let me thank the panel. Professor Oljor.
Later.
Tubbs.
Ditto later.
Okay, and Professor Maggio.
Anyone, if you've seen the movie.
I did.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor, or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM, or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed in the facilities of the Communication Studies Department Recording Studios and the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor was produced, technically directed, witnessed, and totally held together by Michael Jason. And our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. And go Lady Titans softball team, number one in the United States of Division I softball with their grade point average.
And we're back next week with another classic edition of Ask the Professor. So please plan to join us.